Certainly a pleasure to be here. Heard a lot about this program over the years. Known some of the people who've participated. Never had the privilege, so I don't think I've had the privilege. No, I don't think so. And it really is just that. And it's especially a privilege because I think one of the most serious issues today in the world of, I would call it, Jewish leadership is a lack of training. You know, there's a speech from Meir Shapira, Lina Rov, who talks about the meticulousness that we exhibit when we find a sheikhet. He has to study so much halacha, and he has to be tested so much time, and his Yerushalmayim has to be impeccable. And after everything is said and done, that's only to Sheikh Behemoth, he says. And when it comes to the teachers or the leaders of our communities, we don't have such requirements. We don't necessarily have training. We don't have tests. We really don't necessarily find them as prepared as should be for such an important endeavor, which is far more wide-ranging and far-reaching than even shechting animals. So I'm always encouraged to see that there are groups like this where people spend time and serious effort in preparing themselves to be able to serve Klal Yisrael in a much more active and understanding and knowledgeable way. So I guess try to whatever I might be able in the time we have available to contribute to this endeavor, it would certainly be my privilege. I think that there are certain attitudes that we need before we enter into a situation where we're dealing with any leadership role in Klal Yisrael. Rashi happens to be in Parshas Dvorim when he's reviewing the appointment of the Sorei Alofim, Sorei Meos. He says, Ashreichem, you people are very fortunate. Al mi bosem lihismanus, who were you appointed to lead or to guide or to teach or to decide the halachas? Al bnei Avraham Yitzchok v'Yaakov, the descendants of Avraham Yitzchok Yaakov. Al bnei Odom shenikru achim v'reim, people who are called brothers, friends. This is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chelek v'nachlo, the nachlo of Hashem, v'chol loshein chibo. Hashem refers to Klal Yisrael with every lotion of chibo. So the first charge that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the future leadership of Klal Yisrael is this idea of Ashreichem. Who are you leading? What does it mean to be a leader in Klal Yisrael? These are the Bnei Avraham, Yitzchok v'Yaakov. These are the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Bonim Atem LaShem Elokeichem. These are the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu applies every language of chibo and reus and achvo in speaking to them. So it's a privilege to serve Klal Yisrael. And the Mela, that's something that I think if we enter into what we would call Jewish public service with that attitude, we certainly can be far more effective. However, there is a flip side to that. Rashi also in Parshas Dvorim says that when the Pasuk says that Ba'eis Hahi and Moshe Rabbeinu refers to a specific time, he says, Kish Mishamanisem Amarti Lohem, when I appointed these leaders, I told them, Ein Achshov Kol Ein Achshov Kol She'ov Ein Achshov Kishe'ovar Lishe'ovar Hayisem B'shus Atzmetem. Now is not like it used to be. You used to be in your own domain. You used to have your own life. You used to be responsible for yourselves, to yourselves, he says. Achshav, hare atem mishubodim la tzibur. You are mishubed, you are obligated to the tzibur. So on the one hand, leadership is a great privilege. A privilege to lead the Bnei Avraham, Yitzchok v'Yaakov, the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Bonim Atem LaShem Elokeichem. Mitzad Sheni, you're no longer a free man. it's a shibud, like the Loshon of the Gemara. You think that leadership is srora ani noisen lecho, avdus ani noisen lecho. It's servitude, it's shibud, it's like being a slave. A public servant, it's not a bad word, a public servant, maybe we should edit it and say a public slave. And a Jewish public slave is exactly what we're dealing with. So that's very, I think, very important to keep in mind. Do we have a definition for chinuch? Because everybody is involved in chinuch if we're in any leadership position. Because the position of a leader is to teach. Moshe, the ultimate, the first leader of the Klal Yisrael, is referred to as Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu, our master, our teacher. This is, he's our Rav. It's all about teaching. What is teaching? What is chinuch? What are we getting into? Whether it's in Rabbonus, it's chinuch. Whether it's in Kiruv, it's chinuch. Whether it's in the classroom, it's chinuch. What is chinuch? So there's an interesting Rashi in Parshas Lech Lecha, where the Pasuk is speaking about Avram Avinu going out to war, and Vayorek es chanichov. And Rashi says chanichov is a lotion of chinuch. What is chinuch, Rashi says? Initiation, I guess, is the rough translation. So Rashi says, tchilas knisas odom le'umnes she'osid lamud bo. It's the beginning of the entry of a person to an umnes, a skill, or a calling, or a profession that is osid lamud bo. And I think that there are two critical ingredients in this statement of Rashi. One, the obvious one, shehu osid lamud bo. Many people look at leadership as an immediate situation. It has to happen yesterday, like everything else in our society. It's immediate. I gotta get him today. I have to worry about now. A teacher in a classroom thinks about this year, or this week, or this day, or this minute, or this hour. And a Rav thinks about what's happening now. And a Kira person too wants instant progress. But we have to know that the real goal is Osid Lamud Bo. It's how long they're gonna stay with it. Now, not how quickly they got into it. Which means that one of the prerequisites for this calling or profession, as you will, is certainly a lot of patience, because we're not supposed to, we shouldn't expect to see immediate results. In fact, the faster the results, usually the less steady they are. The slower the process, the more mevusas, the more based, the more grounded the process, the more likely that it's osid lamud bo. So that's another very important thing. We're in this for the long term, and we want the long term results. And we don't want to compromise anything in the short term, which is going to compromise anything in the long term. But there's something else very interesting in this Rashi. What is tchilas knisas? The beginning of the entry. Chinuch is the tchilas knisas. Well, who's doing the knisa? The beginning of the entry. So who's doing the entry? And I would suggest, and I think this is a very, very important point, that chinuch is just the initiation. When we initiate the chinuch process, we have to be giving the tools, the means, the motivation, the inspiration for the people to be machnis themselves. Because Rashi says the chinuch part is only the tchilas knisas, which means someone else has to do the knisas. So who's doing the knisas? The Torah says the individual, the mechunuch, has to do the knisas. So part and parcel, and I would say a critical part of this whole system of any form of leadership or any form of educating or teaching, is to grant them tools, inspiration, motivation, so they should carry it on their own. And unfortunately, we find today in the world of Jewish education, far too often we haven't given them enough tools. We've given them, we've maybe, forgive me, overloaded them with information. But if they can't read, or they don't know how to make a leaning on a Gemara, or they can't really understand the nuances and the movement and the question and the answer and how the answer answers the question and what's the next step and what's the sequence, they can't do it on their own. And the bad news is that in this area, art scroll is not enough. The translations are not enough. Because we need the techniques. In fact, the genius of Torah Shebaal Peh is, the Torah Shebaal Peh was not supposed to be written down, so as that shouldn't become the domain of the whole world, because then they would be able to truly understand the Torah Shebichsav. So it was passed down generation to generation. At one point, because of Eislasus Lashem Eferu Torasecho, Rabbeinu HaKodesh and his Bezdin had to decide that it had to be written down. But to this very day, despite all the translations and notations and whatever other elements they have to help us, it still needs a Rebbe. Without a Rebbe to give us the keys, the tools, the ability to do it on our own, the English translation, or any other language for that matter, cannot do it for us, with all the footnotes, with all the explanations, with everything, because we need a Rebbe to give us the tools, the key, so we can open up the wisdom of the Torah Shebaal Peh and be able to understand it. So I believe that the Tchilas Knisas, the way that we have to look at our tafkid in terms of any form of Jewish educational leadership, and all Jewish leadership is education, as we mentioned, we have to look at ourselves as making sure that we give them enough to be motivated, capable, passionate, and skilled enough to be able to continue entering deeper and deeper, further and further into the depths of Torah on their own. I think that's a very significant point to keep in mind as well. There are a couple of other attitudinal things which I think are also very basic prerequisites. In Parshas, in Bamidbar, where once again the Klal Yisrael is complaining, and they were giant tzaddikim, and their complaints were nothing reminiscent of the complaints that we might have, but because they were such great people, they were taken to task. And Moshe Rabbeinu was very distraught with them. And at one point he says, this is in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Aleph, Posuk Yud Beis, Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem, "Ha'anochi harisi es om hazeh, im anochi lidetiu? Have I given birth to these people? Am I their mother? Ki toimar elai, that you're saying to me, so'eu b'chekecho, kasha yiso ho'imin es ayoinik. Carry the Klal Yisrael in your hands, your arms, like this, like the nursing mother carries her little baby." That's what the Pasuk says. So Rashi says like this, "V'heichon omar lo ikein." We don't find any place that Hashem said, "So eu b'chekecho." So what's the Moshe Rabbeinu said? Did I give birth to them? That you could tell me, "So eu b'chekecho"? He never told him, "So eu b'chekecho." So Rashi says, when he says to him, "V'heichon omar lo ikein, leich nacheyes ha'om v'oimer," he says, "Go lead these people." And by Yitzavim el b'nei Yisroel, Al Menas, Rashi says, she was soiklim eschem umecharfim eschem. When Hashem said, "Lead Klal Yisrael," he said to them, even on the condition that they're going to stone you, or they're going to disgrace you, they're going to malign you, you must lead them. Where's Soeh B'chikecho? What's Rashi talking about? The Teretz says, I heard once, and it's clear that that's the pshat, that if Hashem said, "Lead them al menas sheilu soiklin oisoi," there's only one way to put up with a recalcitrant Klal Yisrael, with a cantankerous Klal Yisrael, with a Klal Yisrael that's ready to stone us as leaders, and believe it or not, we'll find, I mean, I don't think today they're stoning anybody, but they're doing other things that are pretty mean sometimes. The only way to put up with that is if your attitude is so'eu b'chekecho. Where did Hashem tell Moshe so'eu b'chekecho? When he said, "Al manas shiyu so'ik l'noi so'i." There's only one way to be fortified enough to put up with the attitude, with the opposition that we may receive, that we can receive, that we're likely to receive from time to time, if not more often, from Klal Yisrael as leaders. And that's if we have the attitude of, this is my little baby. It's as if I gave birth to them. My love, it's tender love. It's kasha yisa ho'uymenes hayoynik, like the nursing mother carries her little baby. If we have that love for Klal Yisrael, that will give us the strength to put up with all the difficulty and all the opposition that they may show us. So these are some general attitudes. But there's another point in leadership. Also in Parshas Dvorim, it's interesting, that's the parasha this week. Also in Parshas Dvorim, very, very interesting concept. Rashi brings that Moshe Rabbeinu only was Mechiach the Klal Yisrael at the end of his life. Right? That's Parshas Dvorim, right before his passing, and he's even gently hinting to them. You know, he doesn't even say it openly. He mentions the names of places, and those are hints to the things that they acted inappropriately, but only at the end of his life. Rashi says, Mimi Lomad. From who did he learn? From Yaakov Avinu. Because Yaakov Avinu said on his deathbed to Reuven, Reuven Bini, do you know why I wasn't Moichiach you earlier? Why I waited till I was on my deathbed, it's easier and I could be embarrassed again and so forth. He says, because I was afraid that if I would be Moichiach you earlier, then you would leave me, Rashi says, Lidobek be'esav ochi, to go to Esav's yeshiva. Yaakov Avinu, who certainly knew how to be Moichiach as gently as Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe Rabbeinu was learning from Yaakov. Reuven the Tzaddik had already done tshuva for his mistake, his pachas kamayim. And Yaakov was afraid that if the Teichocho were to come before he's lying on his deathbed and it's much easier, it's less embarrassing, he's not going to see him again, whatever. He says he was afraid he would leave him, not stop be offended, but leave him to join with his brother Esav. This can be the devastating power of Teichocho. One of the most important lessons for anyone in a position of Jewish leadership to know is that you got to be very careful about reprimanding. Sometimes something, whether it's a student, whether it's a balabos, whether it's anyone, does something, says something, acts in such a way that you can find yourself, you can't even control yourself. You must say something. How can I not comment? How can I not let this fool know this terrible mistake that he's making? But you have to be aware that one teichocho, in the sweetest, which Yaakov could have done, to the most receptive, which Reuven was, individual, could potentially have the ability to send him away completely. So it's something that a leader, I believe, has to constantly keep in mind if we really wish to be able to remain in a position of leadership and to have those that we lead remain under our leadership. Then it's very, very important to keep this concept of the care that we have to have when it comes to doing any type of teichocha. Okay. These are some of the, I would say, awarenesses, prerequisites that a Torah leader, that a Jewish leader should have. What should be the message? One of the key messages, and I believe that these messages are across the board, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in the Kiruv world, whether it's in the from the pulpit, but these are all key messages that are critical for a person to be accepting, to become dedicated, to become passionate, to become committed and observant of a life of Torah and mitzvahs. These are some general prerequisites or general concepts that they must be able to imbibe. And I'd like to just list and maybe very briefly elaborate on a few of them. Number one, happiness. Let's talk for a moment about happiness. I have a question that I often ask about happiness. that more money in the world today is spent on the pursuit of happiness than probably any other industry in the world. Books, workshops, seminars, mental health professionals, you know, there's more money is spent on pursuit of happiness than anything else. And yet, if you judge by any of the statistics, by any of the rates, including the rates that some of the mental health professionals can charge, you find that the world is not a very happy place. Very strange. Everyone's pursuing happiness, and the world doesn't seem to be such a happy place. Why not? I had this kasha many years ago when I lived in California. Beverly Hills, the party capital of the world, the fun capital of the world, the pleasure capital of the world. There's more parties in one night in Beverly Hills than all the state of California in a year. I'm not sure I made that up, but approximately. All right. Then what? Why is everybody so miserable? The divorce rate is the highest. The suicide rate is the highest. The alcohol and drug abuse rate is the highest. And it may not be known to you, but Beverly Hills is the community that invented the concept of the canine shrink. You know what a canine shrink is? A psychologist that you take your dog to. Things got so bad that the animals need a psychologist also. It's not, you know, if the master is happy, the animal can be happy. So Beverly Hills is the most unhappy place in the world. Yet it's the party capital of the world. Hayitochein. How could it be? And I pondered this question for a long time. And I finally came up with a very simple explanation. Everyone's pursuing happiness. And so many people are not finding it. Maybe they don't know what they're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, then it could be right there at your door. You could trip on it and you wouldn't even realize. So maybe nobody knows what happiness is. Then I took it one step further. Not only does our society possibly not know what happiness is, but our society has come up with a definition of happiness which is antithetical to happiness. Just the opposite of happiness. Do you know what that equation is? Happiness equals, don't tell me money, please. Happiness equals?
Comfort. What? Comfort.
Comfort? That wouldn't be so bad. Worse than that. Happiness equals pleasure. Pleasure, that's happiness. Ooh, pleasure, more pleasure, more pleasure, more pleasure, more pleasure, more pleasure, more pleasure. Again. Oh, wonderful. But the problem is that happiness doesn't equal pleasure. In fact, the opposite is true, and allow me to explain. What's the definition of happiness? David HaMelech said, Achas sho'alti me'eis Hashem oiso avakish. David HaMelech had one request. What was it? Shivti be'eis Hashem kol yomei chayai. That's all he wanted, to sit in the be'eis Hashem. What did David HaMelech say about one who sits be'eis Hashem? Anyone know? Probably said it a while ago today. Ashrei yoshvei beisecho. Right? So he wanted, the only thing was to sit beis Hashem. And what did he say about one who sits beis Hashem? Ashrei yoshvei secho. So osher, ashrei, happiness, is probably one of the highest, if not the highest form of happiness. Osher. Osher, the shoresh of osher is aleph, shin, resh. We know in Loshon HaKodesh, when the three letters sherish appears in a word, it describes the essence of the concept. It's not a language like other languages where people just made up to call this a table and to call this a chair and to call this a whatever they call it. It's a language, the Loshon HaKodesh describes the essence of creation. It's the language of HaKodesh Baruch. Osher, the three letters sherish, Aleph, Shin, Resh, stands for Ishur, validation. Happiness is validation. Happiness is feeling good about oneself. If I feel good about myself, I'm happy. Okay? That's the definition. Now, pleasure. Does pleasure make you feel good about yourself? Think twice. Does pleasure make you feel bad about yourself? It does. You know why? Because I don't feel good about myself. I need that drink, I need that drug, I need that thrill, I need that this and that and the other thing in order to feel temporarily good. That means I feel about myself like trash. I don't feel good about myself, and I constantly need to take in from the outside to fill up the void that I feel in feeling not good about myself with all kinds of garbage in order to get through the day, get through the week, get through the month, get through the life. It's the antithesis of happiness. Pleasure makes me feel worse about myself. The need for pleasure makes me feel worse about myself. But pleasure does much more damage than that too, as long as we talk about pleasure just for a moment. I have an experience that I like to share with people, and I heard that somebody just recently, and maybe this trip in Eretz Yisrael, told me that someone told him they had exactly the same experience, exactly with the same, except one name changed, but the same story. I was once in a restaurant, a Milchika restaurant in Florida, in Miami, and it's called Sarah's, and I was introduced to a drink called Pina Colada. First time I ever heard of it, Pina Colada, what do I know for these things? And I liked it. Not bad, Pina Colada. A couple weeks, a month later, 2 months, I don't remember exactly, I was at a wedding, and someone said, hey, I want a drink. You know, let me try Pina Colada. Ah, this was it, Marina Del Rey. Good place, the Choshev place. They don't know how to make Pina Colada. Someplace else, a couple months later, try a pina colada. I mean, I don't have a drinking problem, but anyway. But try a pina colada. Nobody knows how to make pina colada like Sarah's. A while later, I was back in Miami, ran to Sarah's. First thing, didn't look at the menu, just ordered a pina colada. And lo and behold, I discovered that Sarah doesn't know how to make a pina colada. What happened? Very potent. The first time you have a pleasure, wow, it's new, it's fresh, the taste buds have not dulled yet. By the second time, two things happen. The taste, the newness, the freshness, the excitement dulls. But worse than that, the memory from the previous one exaggerates the pleasure in retrospect. So you have a memory that's exaggerated, competing against a pleasure that's diminished. Keep going like that, you end up, there's no pleasure left. The memory is, Sarah's. Oh yes, yeah, Sarah's, everything was out. This one's no good, that was a Sarah. By the time I got to the Sarah again, the memory was like this, and the taste buds had already got used to this pina colada thing, what's the big deal after all? And Mimela, it was, and this is the frustration of the pursuit of pleasure. This is why pleasure, not only pleasure doesn't make me feel good about myself, pleasure makes me feel bad about my pleasures eventually. So, and this is the world we live in, this is what everybody's doing, and this is why the world is such a miserable place. So the first thing that we have to teach people is what happiness is. Happiness is feeling good about yourself. Now, here's the trick. How do you feel good about yourself? Through pleasure? No, we discounted pleasure. Through money? Nah, doesn't work. Some of the wealthiest people in the world are the most insecure people. And if you don't believe that one, I'll introduce you to some of them. But, you know, and the money doesn't help. The money, you got so much money, what are you so nervous about? Why are you so insecure? It doesn't have anything to do with it. So what is it? How do we make ourselves feel good about ourselves? There's probably one word, and there are a few words, but there's probably one word which may be more significant than anything else in making us happy or in destroying the happiness. And that word I would suggest is purpose. Purpose in life. Because if I don't have a purpose, let's say you walked into a psychologist's office, and you say, Doc, I have no purpose in living. If he was worth his salt, this doctor, he would order a suicide watch. Because if you have no purpose in living, why should you live? What's the point? Just to suffer? No purpose. Purpose is a critical ingredient to feel good about myself, because anyone who has no purpose is trash, is a schmata, is a nothing. Okay, now we're getting someplace, but where do I find purpose? Oh, I got an idea. I'm going to choose a purpose. My purpose is to eradicate the cockroaches from Rehov Shimon HaTzadik. I don't even know if you have cockroaches here.
Sure
I don't even know if you know what a cockroach is.
Okay.
Anyway, anyway, my purpose is to eradicate the cockroaches from Shimon HaTzadik. That's why I'm here this evening. Actually, I'm here for a fundraiser because I have to raise some money for this purpose. And I'm going to ask you before I leave to contribute to my cause. And we're going to, I wake up every morning filled with purpose. I'm going to eradicate cockroaches, cockroaches, cockroaches. I raise money to eradicate the cockroaches. Wow. You know, one day I woke up and I said, I looked in the mirror. Well, I stopped looking in the mirror a while back. But anyway, yeah, I looked in the mirror and I said, maybe I'm capable of a higher purpose in life. Maybe I could eradicate rats. You know, maybe I could eradicate terrorists. I don't know. Maybe I could do a higher purpose, and that would be a pretty high purpose. But anyway, maybe I'm capable of a higher purpose in life. And all of a sudden, my bubble busted. I didn't feel so good about myself anymore because. So then I started looking for a higher purpose, and a higher purpose, and a higher purpose. But then I realized something else. That's not really what I want, to feel validated. To have a sense of purpose, I want to know the purpose for which I was put in this world. That's what I really have to know. Now, unfortunately, that's not so easy to figure out. See, this was manufactured, obviously, for a purpose. If I want to know the purpose, there is a means of finding out. I read the manual. The manual tells us the purpose. Okay, but now what do we do? I want to know my purpose in life. I want to have a happy life. I want my life to be full of purpose so I can be happy. So I shouldn't be involved in the empty pursuit of pleasure to destroy me and to put down my sense of validity and my sense of self-worth. Now, at this point, what we've really done is we've suggested that we have to find some way of getting information from the manufacturer, the one who manufactured us, to know what our true purpose in life is. And here's where the key to Jewish leadership comes in. We have such a manual. The manufacturer 3,330 years ago on Shavuos revealed himself to a nation of a few million people, and he told us the purpose for his creation, and he told us the purpose for Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he gave us the manual by which to live to fulfill our purpose. That's tremendous. So what we have done now is connected the happiness in life, which everyone craves, with the purpose in life, which is the only source of happiness, which was and can only be a valid source. Otherwise, it's just like eradicating cockroaches. Only be a valid source if it comes to us in the manual from the Creator. And this is the general attitude of Jewish leadership. Our people have to know that, number one, that the Torah is true. It comes to us from the Creator. And number two, that it's going to make me happy. Those are the two words, the key words, in any form of educational leadership. We wish to be able to teach, to inspire, and to have our constituency learn and know and internalize that the Torah is true. It's the gift of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael. And that it is the ultimate source of happiness for many, many reasons. The individual mitzvahs, how they make us happy. The general purpose, how it makes us happy. The shleimus, that we elevate ourselves to emulate Hashem, which makes me feel very validated and very good about myself because I become godly. And the very fact that we have a purpose in life which can allow me to feel good about myself. This is really, I think, the essential message in any type of hashpah and any type of. Now, it can't necessarily be given in a speech like this, but we have to realize that this is the goal. If we realize that the goal is not just they should believe that the Torah is true, and I'll tell you why, that would be beautiful, except for one thing. They're not going to believe it or to maintain the belief or to listen to it unless they know it's going to make them happy. Nobody wants to know anything that's not going to make them happy. I don't want to hear that it's true. Don't you dare show me that it's true. I'm not interested if it's true. I'll do anything to fight the truth because it's not going to make me happy. And how many people, I just had someone today, oh, it's such a burden, such a burden, such a burden. And they have to see that it's such a privilege. But we can't get all that in an hour. But this idea that it has to be true, in order for anyone to accept and to realize that it's true, he must recognize that there are benefits for him, and happiness is the greatest benefit in our world today. And I imagine from time immemorial, happiness is what it's all about. But there's something else too. It's not enough that he knows it's going to make him happy, even if it's not true. You know why? Because if a person realizes that a life of Torah and mitzvahs is going to make him happy, so he may say like this, ooh, it's going to make me happy, I'm going to do it. He's doing it for a couple of years or a couple of weeks or months or whatever it may be, and then he wakes up one day and says, you know, I like this. This is very happy, making me happy. But maybe there's something out there that'll make me more happy. Let's go to India. Let's go to, where do they go? To Thailand. Let's go I don't know where they go, where you guys go. I'm not you guys. Where your friends out there go today. Let's travel the world. Let's try to figure out, maybe there's a guru on top of a mountain someplace in the Himalayas that can make us even more happy. But if I know that it's true and it makes me happy, I ain't going no place. It's validating, it makes me feel good about myself. It's the true purpose for which I'm in this world. I'm here to stay. And that really is, in a very brief presentation, the major goal of any type of influence that we're going to have. And the way to achieve this goal, by the way, is definitely not through a lecture. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. It's not a one-time attack. It's not a one-time presentation. It's an ongoing attitude that has to develop. And bichlal, things that develop, that people discover on their own, are much more, enter the heart and the mind much more freely. There's less resistance. One of the beautiful things about the hashpah that a rabbi can have is with a weekly sermon. Because in the weekly sermon, he talks about the parsha. That doesn't mean it's personal. I'm talking about the parsha. Here, for example, I'm talking about parshas Dvorim. I wasn't insulting you people as machanchim that you don't know the basics of chinuch. Just happened to be in the parsha. Not exactly true, because that's what I was asked to come here for. But anyway, but it's in the parsha. It's not like, you know, so a person thinks, uh-oh, the rabbi's on my case. Uh-oh, I better get my defenses. Uh-oh, some balabatim go like this so that I can go to the guy behind them. You know, some people, like I remember vividly as a 15-year-old kid, when the rabbi on the second day of Shavuos gave a fiery drosha, and I ran over before Kaddish and Musa and say, Rabbi, they really needed that. And the rabbi went like this and said, what do you mean they, Kimosabi? Yeah, so, but you always want this for someone else. Let the next guy get it. But the parasha is not threatening. The parasha is very innocent. For that purpose, I have, and I'm really trying to get a lot in here in a short period of time, I've brought, and I have, think, how many people, I think I have enough copies for everyone. I should have enough. If not, we'll figure out a way. It's something that's entitled Torah Ben HaShemayim. Let me tell you just a little story, just to lighten the atmosphere a little bit. When I wrote this for the first time, so one of my kids was just learning how to use the computer, and they made me stationary. So they wrote my name, Rabbi Shaya Cohen, Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva Zichron Aryeh, Mechaber, because they saw that you put books for him that a person wrote. Mechaber, Torah Ben HaShemayim. Hey guys, that's me. Mechaber, Torah Ben HaShemayim. I bet you didn't know who was coming to speak this evening. All right, the Mechaber of Torah Ben HaShemayim. Anyway, this book, I believe, is precious. Not necessarily because of its content, which I think is good, but it's precious because of its concept. The concept is just what we spoke about. That on Kimad, on every Parsha, you have a Vort, a little Bar Torah or something, to be machazik the truth of Torah, and then a piece which we call beliefs and benefits and belief, a piece to show the benefits of the mitzvahs. So you have the truth and the good, the benefit and the truth working together. Here they appear on the same page. So it's something that when you, now if you just read it constantly, you'll turn somebody off. But if you use it occasionally, it's in a classroom, sometimes for a Dvar Torah to send home, sometimes for a sermon, sometimes in a Kiruv setting, and you could touch with two different concepts in a gentle way, gentle, not screaming and yelling and passionate, not threatening, not overly excited, not unduly excited either. Well, sometimes understatement helps, but not always. You gotta wake them up also. Understatement can put people to sleep, so you need something in between. But, and then, wow, and wow, again and again and again. And before you know it, over the period of a year, people will at least get this idea. There must be something to this Judaism after all. There's something really there. And if it's from people, believe me, from people have shilas and emuna and have sfeikis and have weaknesses and have... So this is something good for everyone. So I strongly recommend that you look at it. It has some explanatory notes in the beginning. And hopefully we'll have enough to give to each person before we leave. Another thing as a leader you should know, don't give anything out while you're still speaking, because otherwise they read and they don't want to listen to you. So this we'll give out later. Okay. Now, let's continue for a moment. There's something else which I think, and I have another little gift that I'd like to give you also. This one is called Advice for the Machanek. I hope I have enough copies also. Something that actually we published many years ago, and has many different things, advice on many aspects of things that we haven't spoken about, mostly maybe, and even examples of teaching in a way that's stimulating, that's challenging. See, the best learning is interactive learning. And for this, I quote the scholar Benjamin Franklin, forgive me. Benjamin Franklin said, tell me, he was a smart man, whatever else you might know or think about it, but he was a smart man. Tell me, I'll forget. Show me, I'll remember. Involve me, I'll understand. Any learning process should be interactive. Now, a rabbi with a sermon has a hard time. If he has a congregation of 10 people, it's a lot easier. If he has a congregation of 1,000 people, it's really impossible. But then he has to have other opportunities to interact with them in a small workshop, in a small class. To the best of my knowledge, colleges have gone away from building large lecture halls to building more seminar rooms, because a room like this is an ideal college classroom, because there could be a, look how much interaction we've had tonight. Anyway, I talk and sometimes you laugh, that's good. But anyway, but that's because we only have an hour. I can't help that, you know. So, but basically, interactive learning, said, keep that in mind. Remember, it's only if they're interacting that they really know what you're talking about. If only it's if they can ask questions that they can ever really figure out if they know what you're talking about, or you could figure out if they know what you're talking about, or if it went right over their head. And you should encourage questions. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know. Chaskel Abramsky, who was Bismanoi, the Godel Ador, he told me once, he said, when he was a dayan in England for some 20 years, first day on the new job, there was an old dayan who retired, and then they got him the job, he was a young man, and the Rosh HaKol comes to ask him a shayla, he says, ich weiß nicht, I don't know the answer. So the Rosh HaKol was very perturbed, he called up the old dayan called him, how you talking, you don't know the answer? Just, he said, of course I know the answer. The first lesson that the Jews of London have to learn is the Rav does not have to know all the answers. There's nothing wrong with an honest answer that says, I don't know. But it has to be followed by, I plan to find out. We'll look into it, we'll do research, we'll talk to someone, because otherwise you're invalidating the questioner. You're putting him down. That we can't do. Okay, that we can't do. So that's very important, that questions are very important. Interactive learning is very important. There's another piece which I'd like to add at this time. Actually, two pieces. One is a Gemara that we bring here, should look at it, it's towards the end, and he says that if a person is learning is kosher olav kebarzel, it's biyodua sharabo lehizbe leponim. It's his Rebbe didn't smile at him. The warmth, the kindness, the welcomingness, the empathy, the connection that you show in a classroom or in anything, even in a sermon, a rabbi can be, you know, just benevolent, just such a kind, such a welcoming, such a loving person that 1,000 people in the shul can also feel that, wow, this guy really cares about us, this guy really feels for us, this guy really empathizes with us. And that's, if it's kosher olav kebarzel, it's like iron, like they used to say, an ice in a cup. You know, it's like it's iron, you can't penetrate anything. He says, Rabba lo hizbe lo ponim. Should be mazbe lo ponim, and everything can change. That's one thing. But there's something else we have to know as well. Rashi in Parshas Pinchas, just read it recently, where Moshe Rabbeinu is apprised of the fact that he is about to pass on from the world. And he asks Hashem for a successor, and he has four items on his short list for the qualifications for the successor. The first one, he says, Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Moshe al Hashem, Yifkoid Hashem elekei haruchais l'chol bosor, ish al ha'edo. Appoint a leader, Hashem Elokei Aruches, the God of the spirits of all flesh. Appoint a leader on the congregation. So Rashi seems to be bothered by Hashem Elokei Aruches L'chol Boso. What kind of sprach is that? What kind of talk? Hashem Elokei Aruches. Yifkei Hashem Ish Al Eido. So Rashi says the tefillah of Moshe was like this: Rabbeinu Shemayim, Golui V'yodu Alefanecho, that every person is different. Appoint a leader, sheyuchal lizboil kol echod ve'echod lefi datoi, who can tolerate every individual according to his own unique individuality. A critical point of leadership. The first item on the short list of the requirements of Moshe Rabbeinu for a successor, to be able to deal with each individual. It's so much easier to be able to deal with the klal as one homogeneous unit. It's sevel, Rashi says, to go the other way. It's painful. But it's the most important ingredient. Everybody is different. Everyone is unique. And this is not for a class, for a family of 10 kids, and not for a class of 20 kids, and not for a school of 1,000 kids. It's for Klal Yisrael of a few million nefashos. The first requirement on the short list, everyone is an individual and deal accordingly. I think that in a position of Jewish leadership, the godless of the greatest leaders that we had was, yes, they were able to lead the rabbim, but they identified with each yochid. They could differentiate the program for each yochid. They knew what this yochid needed and what this yochid couldn't tolerate. And that was the sign of true leadership. So in any form of leadership, everyone is different. This, and we have in our society today a problem, because the numbers that we've achieved in the religious world, the frum world, are such that the classes are bulging, the schools are bulging, the families are bulging, and it's very hard to differentiate, to individualize with each thing. Now, we have to do what we have to do, but as much as possible. Like for a family, they say, give each child individual quality time. Find the time in every week to spend private, individual, and quality time with each individual child. Now, with a Rebbe of 25 or 30 kids, it's harder. With a Rav of 500 members, it's even harder. But we have to do the best we can. We have to realize that that's what it's about. And one size does not fit all. In fact, I would like to say that one size fits none. None. There's nobody that fits the universal mold, because there is no universal mold. Everybody is different. And I think that's a major key in any type of Jewish leadership to keep such a very important point in mind. Now, I'd like to maybe conclude, because we just have a few moments, with one other ingredient which I think is very, very critical. And that is, as a leader, as a Rebbe, as a Rav, as a person involved with Kiruv, we become a very significant person in the lives of the people that we're influencing. And when we want to influence them in Torah, the way that we will do so is only if we ourselves are mole, full with wisdom of Torah, and a shining example of the way a Torah personality has to live and behave. If not, then we negate everything that we preach. We can preach happiness, but if we walk into the room and they think we're not happy, we're depressed, we're miserable, forget your lecture about happiness. May give a lecture about misery or something. You know? But it's not going to work. Same thing, we're going to talk about midos. And then they see somebody was a little bit, that midos hakas flares up. Then we talk about negias, you know, blindness, being pure in one's thinking, one's judgment, and so forth. And then they see where we're negev bedover, we can't see straight. It's all over. It's all over. The you know, years ago I used to speak about, I stopped it because it became too true, so I had to stop talking about it and tell you what I mean in a moment. I used to say that it used to be, this was like 30 years ago, it used to be the biggest excuse that people had for not being religious was the suffering of the righteous, which is a topic that, you know, has to be discussed, suffering of the righteous. Today, they say it's the behavior of the righteous. There's a bigot excuse. Because if the people who are allegedly, supposedly, the righteous people, or especially if they're my Rebbe, my Rav, my teacher, and when it comes to practicing what they preach, they don't, it's all over. That's the best excuse to disqualify everything that we've said. And this do as I say, not as I do, it doesn't work for your 2-year-old kid. It's certainly not going to work for your Talmud, for your Balabos, for your anyone. It doesn't work. So it's extremely important for us to realize we have to work on ourselves. We have to learn Musa every day. We have to be growing together with our students, with our Balabatim, with even the people that were being Makarev. I'm also growing. I also have my nisyonos. I'm trying my best. And when I make a mistake, you know, there was a question, a big chinuch question going around a few years ago. If a Rebbe, or if a parent, maybe both, I don't forget the question was, does something wrong to someone, should they apologize? I never saw something so asinine in my life. Should they apologize? How could a Rebbe apologize? How could a parent apologize? Loizu haderech, unless we can be exemplary specimens of that which we are teaching, unless we model what we're teaching, we cannot do it. We cannot, they won't buy it. And I'd like to just one more minute close with the following. I heard many years from my Rebbe, the Rosh Hashiva, the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, Zachorin Livrocha, said as follows. The Gemara in Yuma says, Hillel Mechayev Anim. Hillel is Mechayev, and Hillel learned Bedachkus in poverty. That's Mechayev Aniyah Yisrael today to learn Torah. So he has the Kasha B'Mohem Shach. If the Oni has the potential to learn Bedachkus, so why does he need Hillel to be Mechayev? If you have the potential to learn, you have to learn. And if the Oni doesn't have the potential to learn Bedachkus, then how's Hillel Mechayev the Aniyim? The Oni can't do it. He's Potter. What does it mean, Hillel Mechayev Aniyim? He said the Pshat is that the existence of a Hillel, the picture of a Hillel on the roof, covered with snow, listening to the shir of Shmaya Avtalion, because he didn't have the few piastas to get into the Beis Medrash. That's Mechayev Aniyim, because that creates new potential. Seeing Hillel in his Mesiras Nefesh gives us new potential. Now the Oni who didn't have the koyach to learn before and wouldn't have been mechuyev for learning, for not learning, is now mechuyev because Hillel existed. I say to you, Rabbi Yisai, that when we set a proper example, not only do we give them a living example, model a living example, but we change and inspire new potential in the people that we are influencing. Seeing that we can do it, and sometimes under difficult circumstances or whatever the situation may be, seeing the act, seeing the Mesiras Nefesh, seeing the dedication, the passion in the life, in the flesh, can not only influence and inspire, it can create new potential. Now these people will have more potential to serve properly, to do the Avodas Hashem, to rise to the spiritual challenges, because they saw it in us. So we have a tremendous sense of opportunity, and we have a tremendous sense of responsibility. And you should be matzliach in all of the, in every one of the various areas that you go into, and Hashem should be with you.